I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The political career of John Turner, Canada's 17th Prime Minister, is chronicled in a comprehensive new book, Elusive Destiny, The Political Vocation of John Napier Turner. He was Prime Minister in 1984 for 79 days after Pierre Trudeau resigned, and he was defeated in the election of that year by Brian Mulroney. Before that, he was an able minister in the cabinets of Lester Pearson, as well as in Trudeau's, as his justice minister, English lieutenant, and finance minister. He left politics for the private sector in 1975 to return when Trudeau resigns in 1984. He leads the Liberal Party of Canada in 1984 and in 1988, the free trade election, when he made one last try, which many have considered his finest hour, when he and Mulroney had a lively exchange on patriotism, continental pressure, and political independence. The author of the book, Paul Litt, joins me now. He is a historian and a professor in both the departments of history and the School of Canadian Studies at Carleton University. The book is published by UBC Press. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Ottawa this morning, Paul Litt. Good morning, Professor Litt.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. How did you come to write this book?
Well, you know, the standard expression is that winners write history, and so the period from the 1960s through the 1980s has often been interpreted through the lens of Trudeau, and this was an opportunity to take another look at it from, you know, the perspective of a different prominent politician of that era. Turner, when he left politics in the 80s, his reputation was in tatters, really, and there was an earlier Turner. He had two distinct careers, one where he was very successful early on, and the later career not so much. And then in between, he had this interesting period when he was out of politics, when he was considered to be the heir apparent to the Liberal Party. So he played a role in national politics as kind of the myth of the heir apparent, even when he wasn't actively participating.
The two Turners that we see in this book, had he changed much, say, from the time that he was in Pearson's government as the sort of minister without portfolio, the consumer affairs guy, to when he was, let's say, I don't know, the Trudeau in the 80s, where he was the leader of the opposition, especially during the free trade years?
Yeah, that is one of the biggest mysteries, you know. How do you explain the difference between his early success and his later frustrations? And there are a couple of different factors involved. One, I think, is his inability to really master the medium of television, which hurt him terribly in the 1980s. Early on, it wasn't as important. Secondly, I think, you know, he had mellowed a bit by the time he came back in the 80s. And when he was so successful in the late 60s and early 70s, he was a very dynamic, very adroit politician with his hands on all the levers. When he came back, he'd been out of politics for 7 or 8 years and was a bit rusty, and it was almost all over before he really got back into form as a politician, because the 84 election came quick on the heels of his election as leader of the Liberal Party. So part of the expectation of Turner when he came back and became Liberal leader in 84 was that he was the only Liberal that could win an election for the Liberal, the Federal Liberal Party in 84, because they'd been in power for, you know, almost 20 years, and a complete change of image was necessary to distance them from Trudeau. And when Turner failed to deliver that election, when he failed to win power, his usefulness to the people who'd backed him was negligible. And so it led to, you know, years of infighting and factionalism in the Liberal Party.
Well, Trudeau says, and I read this in the book, that he could have won that 84 election.
Yeah, well, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, you know, the long term that I just sketched out. Any government that's in power for the better part of 20 years accumulates all kinds of grievances, and it's really difficult to avoid a changeover. So that's the bigger picture. Now, when you focus in on 84, you can see in the polls that you know, Turner did have a slight advantage in the spring of 84 before the election was called, and the perception of him was that he was a more experienced and competent leader than Mulroney. So, unfortunately, the Liberals were so disorganized and they ran such an inept campaign, and he made quite a few mistakes himself, that that perception was quickly eradicated. And so any advantage that Turner had as a new figure offering change went out the window, and voters basically reverted to their disposition to vote conservative that they'd had earlier in the year.
We forget how close that election was. People thought how close it was. I remember there was talk during the debate, I watched it a couple months ago, about how it could have been a minority government. I read that in your book. I've been reading Craig Oliver's book, and he mentions that too, that people were wondering what happens if Mulroney gets a minority or whether Turner gets a minority himself.
At the start of the election.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, a couple of things happened in the early weeks. There was the issue of patronage.
Yeah.
And Turner really, what he had to do in order to win that election was to distance himself from Trudeau and the previous Liberal government. And there were a couple of issues by which he failed miserably to distance himself. One was that he ended up accepting the responsibility for appointing people as, making patronage appointments that Trudeau wanted. And the reason he did that was that he took some bad advice and thought that unless he made these appointments of MPs, that he would not be asked to form a government by the Governor General because he would lose a majority in the House.
Yeah.
So that was one connection. He, instead of refusing to have anything to do with Trudeau's patronage, he got involved with that and tarred by the same brush. The second problem was that he wanted to have the support of the Liberal establishment. He thought he needed it to win the election. And so when he appointed his own cabinet, he was beholden to so many people that the cabinet he appointed looked very much like the old Trudeau cabinet. So instead of signaling change, he ended up looking like he was just more of the same. And then, of course, Mulroney nailed him with the patronage issue in that television debate in the middle of a campaign. So that that was a decisive moment that everybody remembers, but actually the polls were trending towards the Conservatives even before the debate. And then the interesting thing about the last half of that campaign is that polls really did play a large role, with people looking at it as a horse race where the Conservatives were pulling away. And so there's kind of a bandwagon effect because of all the polling that was going on. And, of course, you see Quebec switch from, you know, the vast majority of seats being Liberal to going with the native son, Mulroney. And that had a decisive effect, too, in bringing about Mulroney's huge majority.
That debate in 1984, when Mulroney points at him and says, "You had an option, sir." You must have talked to Turner about that and what he thought after that happened. Did he think after that debate that he was sunk?
Yes, he knew he'd screwed up.
Yeah.
And you know, this is pure speculation on my part, but I think that when Mulroney attacked him, he actually felt guilty. And he froze like a deer in the headlights for a moment because his conscience was saying to him, "Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have taken, you know, the advice to make those appointments for Trudeau." And so the worst thing you can possibly do in a debate situation like that is to go on the defensive. It should be attack, 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 put the other guy on back on his heels. So that was a critical moment when he just looked hapless. And that imagery of him being attacked by Mulroney and not having a quick comeback got replayed on clips on TV for, you know, days to follow, and it was really devastating.
No, his finest hour comes 4 years later, you argue in the book, the free trade debate in 1988. He didn't win that election, and free trade is still with us. Do you think he was wrong?
About free trade? No,
yeah.
I don't. I think, you know, he thought that Mulroney had given away too much for what he got. You have to, you know, in the broader context, realize that we're in a liberalizing trade environment regardless, because the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades was being negotiated continuously, and tariffs were going down. So it had really become a matter of Mulroney needing a deal in order to get reelected. And Turner thought he'd given away too much. He'd given away financial industries. He'd given away culture. He'd given away oil in order to secure access to the American market. And then on top of that, Turner argued that that access was itself not guaranteed because the Americans would never really give up control over trade policy that Congress had as one of its basic prerogatives. So for all those reasons, Turner just thought it's a bad deal. He's not opposed to free trade in principle, although he does have many concerns about a deal between Canada and the U.S. just because of the disproportionate power of the two parties. So bilateral deals with the U.S. he wasn't too keen on. And so down the road, I think that the interesting thing about that election is that it goes back to Turner's problems with image and his problems back in 84, because the question, I think, following the 84 election was that, you know, could anybody whose image had been so badly savaged ever be rehabilitated and win an election? So after the television debate in 1988, Turner performed well and the Liberals were surging ahead in the polls. The Conservatives struck back by going for Turner's image and questioning whether he really was such a patriot, but suggesting to people that he was really just out for his own job, and effectively invoking the Turner of 1984 as opposed to the passionate free trade opponent that Canadians had seen in 88. And that approach worked. They won the election by having superior resources to bring to bear in the media and using those resources to attack Turner's character.
Now, that 88 election sort of saved the Liberals. I mean, there was talk during that campaign that the NDP could have overtaken and become official
right.
opposition like they have this year.
Yes.
By the next election, they were in office for at least a decade. There's another book out this season. I'm sure you've heard about it, where one author, one journalist, talks about sort of the declining fortunes of the Liberal Party. Can they sort of be stemmed back to, can they go back to 1988 even, where the Liberal Party is today?
I think so. It's all speculation and partly hope on my part to say that, because I prefer a three-party system to a polarized two-party system.
Right.
One of the reasons that the Liberals came back in the 90s and were around for another 10 or 12 years, 13 years, was that Turner in 84, after that disastrous defeat, went back to the grassroots of the party and started working to rebuild it from the constituency level up. And that, I think, is the task that lies ahead of the Liberal Party once again today. There's been a sense in which they've relied too much on trying to find a leader who will, you know, lead them out of the wilderness, and rely on charisma and the image of the leader. It's a kind of an easy fix that Trudeau epitomized with his charisma, but they haven't been able to find another Trudeau with the same kind of charisma. So I think it comes down to going back to the grassroots and organization. But also, they have to stand for something, so they have to sketch out policy positions. Their place in the political spectrum in Canada is where most of the votes are usually. So if there is a centrist alternative between, the left and the right, there are possibilities there. And the other thing that I think we might see is that fundraising might work in their favor, because there are lots of wealthy individuals and large corporations who probably don't want a left-wing party in power and would prefer to alternate between the Liberals and the Conservatives. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Liberals get more resources than they've had in the recent past.
Let's go back to his early life now, I guess we should have started there, but 84
well,
and 80.
Okay. We can be postmodern and jump around.
Yeah. The early life. His father had died at a young age, is that right? And so his mom was a civil servant, and then she ended up marrying a guy who became lieutenant governor here in B.C. I guess that's the connection here in B.C. Was politics for John Turner, was that always the goal?
I think it was bred in the bone. I think he soaked it up as a teenager, even younger, in Ottawa, because his mother was a high-ranking civil servant and, you know, the highest-ranking woman in the public service in that era, in the 1930s and 40s. And so there'd be all of these public servants who'd come and socialize at the Turner household, and he'd hear their discussions, and he'd soak up the public service ethos of nationalism and public service being key. And so from a very young age, he was basically hooked. And I think you can see that coming into play later on when he goes into politics, because he had a very promising career as a corporate lawyer, or not as a corporate lawyer, as a lawyer for a Montreal firm. And then again, after his hiatus, after he resigned in 75, he was a very successful businessman in the late 70s, early 80s. And very few people, I think, would walk away from the kind of money he was making in order to go into politics, which is an uncertain game. But it was in his blood. So he felt that when people were urging him to return, that he had kind of a duty, and, you know, he loved it. So that all goes back to his childhood growing up in Ottawa in a culture that was that took national politics seriously and thought that that kind of service was an honor and one of the best things you could do with your life.
Turner's, I guess, he's regarded as someone who liked women. You've touched on his mother's influence in his life. What about his wife's influence? In his
wife's
career,
a very strong woman.
Yeah.
She was very well educated, and you know, came from a well-to-do family, and she elected to raise a family. And so I think nowadays she probably would have been a career woman, because that was just before the women's movement got underway in the 1960s. So you don't see a lot of her on the public record. She campaigned with him once in a while, campaigned independently a bit. And you see a lot of those types of lifestyle magazine articles about, you know, the wives of the politicians trying to get a read on their family life that way. But in terms of his public life, she did not, I don't think, play a very prominent role.
Did John Turner, did he date Princess Margaret?
Yeah, date, I guess, I don't know. When the times that they met on the public, or the times that are known that they met, were all sort of public affairs where there was dancing at a ball or something like that. Did he date her? It would probably be hard because she returned across the Atlantic.
But he went to go see
her. With her subsequently.
Yeah, he went to go see her, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think they just realized it was an impossible relationship, even though they'd hit it off. And so, circumstances being different, maybe something would have happened, but it's hard to conduct a transatlantic romance. And, you know, he was a Catholic, too, so that's another factor there. It was certainly when they had their encounters in Canada, it was a tabloid sensation, because the monarchy was, you know, much more topical then than it is now, and everybody knew that Princess Margaret had just come off of this relationship with a man that the palace would not let her marry. And so everybody was wondering, well, what's this heartbroken young princess going to do? And when she took up with at least a young, dashing Canadian lawyer, it was headline news around the Commonwealth.
We've read in books, there's a ton of books on Trudeau, so we sort of get a sense of how Trudeau felt about Turner.
Right.
In the book, you sort of look at sort of the relationships that Trudeau had with his rivals, first Trudeau and then Chrétien. Does he like them? or does he hate them?
It's interesting. You know, he's a hard man to get to say anything nasty about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he truly believes that you know, politics is best conducted on a higher level and not to get into personal attacks, perhaps because, you know, those in glass houses, etc. But the relationships, I would say, with Trudeau at first, they got on well enough, and I think professionally that they were a very effective team because, as I say in the book, Turner compensated for a lot of Trudeau's shortcomings and negotiated with people when they thought that Trudeau was behaving high-handedly and smoothed things over on many different important national issues in the late 60s and early 70s. It was Turner who was really playing that role and making federal policies that Trudeau initiated work. But that relationship degenerated because purely because of the fears that each had of each other, the rivalry for power. And, you know, Trudeau did not like the idea that everybody was saying that Turner was the natural successor. He did not like the idea that people suggested that he should leave and make way for Turner. And so he just got his back up, and he started sabotaging anything Turner could do to succeed him. When Trudeau finally left in 84, and this is one of the places where I think Trudeau comes off looking very bad. He had been supported by the Liberal Party and won the prime ministership a number of times, but when he left, he turned his back on the party, essentially, and didn't do anything to ensure that it would have a fair run at the next election. He left Turner very little time to call an election, to organize for an election, to effect a transition. He interfered during the Liberal leadership campaign, claiming that Turner had lied about why he had resigned in 1975. And then he indulged in that massive patronage appointments, which gave the party a really bad image, just as it was about to go to the polls. So Trudeau certainly did not make things easy for Turner. Later on, he intervenes publicly to contradict Turner on the Meech Lake issue. With Chrétien, relations deteriorate beginning in the late 1970s when Turner is in private practice in Toronto and is co-author of a limited circulation corporate newsletter in which comments are made that are derogatory about Chrétien. And Chrétien's a very proud man, and he resents those comments. Turner apologizes, but I don't think Turner really realized the extent of the damage. And then later, when they were both running for the Liberal leadership in 1984, Chrétien can't understand why the Liberal establishment is going whole hog behind Turner. He thinks, you know, I've been the one who's been fighting in the trenches with the Trudeau government for the past decade. And, you know, all the IOUs he tried to pull in proved to be useless because everybody just wanted to go with the man they thought could win, who was Turner. So Chrétien comes out of that Liberal race very embittered. He thought he was the better leader, and then when Turner blows the election in 84, he's even more deeply convinced of that. And the consensus among a large number of Liberals is that they won't win again with Turner, and they should get him out immediately and get Chrétien in. So there's all kinds of factionalism and intrigue in the back rooms of the party during that 84 to 88 period. And that certainly leads to all kinds of bitterness and resentment between Turner and Chrétien, because Turner thinks that the leadership is rightfully his, and how could somebody subvert him in this way? Whereas Chrétien and the others are thinking, well, we can't win with this guy, as I said, and why doesn't he just go now?
Now, there's a chapter at the end of the book called Might Have Beens. Well, it's not called that. It's called something. Might Have Beens is in the title. Let's say Turner was was in politics in a different time. Say there wasn't a Trudeau or the sort. Would he have been a good prime minister, do you think?
Yes, I think he would have. You know, let me go on a bit about the difference in the their leadership styles, because you know, Trudeau was famous for knowing his own mind and going the way that he wanted to go and taking people with him. I'm overdrawing this a little bit because he was a pragmatic politician as well. Mm-hmm. But Turner was really deeply steeped in a brokerage style tradition of liberal politics, where within the Liberal Party as a whole, you brokered all the various interests and came up with solutions. And so you had a national institution, a political party that represented all the regions, all the interests, all the factions of the country. Under Trudeau, the Liberal Party became, you know, very unpopular in the West and very unpopular in business circles. I don't think that would have happened had Turner been leader in the 1970s at some point. So there would have been a continuation of that tradition of brokerage politics instead of the Liberal Party under Trudeau going for particular constituencies that targeted every time. So the other thing is that I think there would have been some kind of constitutional deal that wouldn't have been as extensive as Meech Lake. Mm-hmm. But Turner was not as opposed to accommodating Quebec as Trudeau was. And in fact, in 1986-87, the Liberals came up with a position on the Constitution in Quebec, which was not as extensive as Meech Lake, but might have represented a good basis for negotiation. But the way I flip this on its head is that, you know, when you look at the 1980s and what happened under Mulroney, it's hard to imagine a worse outcome, because by the end of that decade, Canadians were just exhausted, and they'd had a gun at their head with Meech Lake and then Charlottetown saying, this country is going to break up unless you approve these deals. And so the tensions ran high for so long that nobody could really deal with constitutional issues anymore. So in that regard, it's you know, a Turner prime ministership certainly couldn't have been any worse, I would say.
Now, back to how you came to write this book, is this sort of an authorized biography? Is this as close as we'll get to a Turner memoir, say?
I don't know exactly what authorized means. I got Mr. Turner's permission to access his papers in Library Archives Canada.
Uh-huh.
And there's material there that goes from the 1960s when he first came into public life up until 93 when he left as an MP. And, you know, I was able to interview him. He would always say that I want this book to be on the issues. And that was fine by me because, you know, it's the issues that I'm interested in. So it's a political biography. It's not a, you know, whole life. He does have many amazing anecdotes about his experiences in politics in Canada, but also, you know, he dealt with the White House extensively, and he had a lead role with the IMF, so he's been all around the world and met all kinds of famous people. So there's all that vast store of anecdote, which doesn't really appear in this book, because I'm trying to focus it more on his political life and his significance to the political history of Canada. So maybe there is a memoir there that could come out and supplement this. It would be more colorful, perhaps, and more anecdotal. But I don't think it would, in the long run, have as much to contribute to our understanding of Canadian politics in the late 20th century. He was a very important figure in the 70s, and you know, had things turned out differently, could have been seen as a key figure in the 80s as well.
But he's pleased with the book, right? I mean, I saw an interview with Mansbridge with him on it, and they were talking about it.
Yeah, I think that he's probably pleased to be taken seriously after the way he left politics in the 1980s.
Right.
There are certain things that he doesn't like in the book, because I'm critical of things that he did, particularly in the 1980s. I think that, you know, he was given a pretty bad hand to play with, but he made some terrible gaffes at key moments. But on the whole, I think that you know, he's happy to re-engage with his career because, as we were discussing earlier, his importance in Canadian politics in the late 60s and early 70s has really been forgotten. It's been overlooked. Mm-hmm. And in public memory, I think he looms largest as the Liberal leader who did not win power. And that was a rare thing for a Liberal leader. You know, before Turner came, most Liberal leaders had been Prime Minister for a substantial amount of time, certainly in the 20th century. From today's perspective, however, he's not looking so bad, yeah, comparatively, because since then we've had, you know, in recent memory, Stéphane Dion and Michael Ignatieff, whose frustrations have equaled, if not exceeded, Turner's. So in that sense, you can see him as an early bellwether of some of the problems that the Liberals were starting to experience in the late 20th century, issues that they never really resolved and have come home to roost in the early 21st century.
Finally, Paul, have you any insight on how Mr. Turner would feel about a Liberal Party led by Justin Trudeau?
Oh, I don't think he'd mind any leader as long as the Liberals were restored to vitality as a national political party. I think he really does like what the Liberals stand for, and you know, he personified it as fiscal responsibility with a social conscience. He said, I'm left-wing socially and right-wing fiscally. He was always looking for a balance between those things. So, you know, as I said before, that's the center of the political spectrum where most Canadians' values lie, and he thinks that there should be a party that can represent those Canadians.
Professor Litt, congratulations on this book, and thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you.
The book is called Elusive Destiny, The Political Vocation of John Napier Turner. It's published by UBC Press. Its author, Paul Litt, on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.